Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. On Tuesday, January 20th, the 2015 legislative session began up in Santa Fe, with the governor setting out her agenda in the state of the state and urging cooperation among legislators. For the first time in more than 50 years, Republicans are in control of the state House of Representatives, outnumbering Democrats 37 to 33, ushering in new committees and committee structures and rules, much of which has been opposed by the now minority Democrats. How will these changes in the House impact the legislative session? Will long simmering issues like driver's licenses for foreign nationals, right to work, and abortion restrictions find some traction this year? And what could be looming out in the distance, unexpected but possible? Today, we have brought together a panel of esteemed local journalists to discuss these issues. Joining me in the studio are freelance writer and editor Margaret Wright, the former managing editor of the Weekly Alibi and the New Mexico Compass, who is currently a contributor at the New Mexico Political Report, an online news outlet that launched earlier this month, and Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth. Joining me by telephone from Santa Fe is Patrick Malone, a reporter with the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for taking time out from your busy schedules up at the Capitol to be with us today to participate in our program. Email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Gwyneth Doland, you've been very active on both radio and television, reporting from the state capitol in Santa Fe. Good to see you and hear you.
Thanks.
Speaking with legislators and activists across the political spectrum, what is the atmosphere like in the capitol and particularly in the House this year?
Well, the atmosphere is really not that different from most 60-day sessions. It's a mix of anxiety, fear, excitement, passion, hope, joy, misery, doubt. It's pretty much a grab bag of emotions up there. I think, you know, there's a whole new group of people who are seeing potential for their ideas, but everybody is just trying to figure out how the new committee structure, how the new power structure is going to affect them, and we don't really know yet.
Well, just as a real quick primer, so legislation is introduced in both houses, either the House or the Senate, but if it's introduced in the House, where we see changes, what will have to happen to it along the way in order for it to become law?
I think the House goes in order, I think, and sends them out to committee in the order in which they're introduced. Am I making that up? Is that right? That's different from the Senate?
It could be different this year.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Well, somebody call in and let me know if I'm saying that wrong. They do it a little bit differently. But, you know, so legislation is assigned to a number of committees that have to go through it. So, for example, the bill to legalize marijuana got 5 committees. And what that frankly means is that will go nowhere. That's
now
not
that
happen.
Bill was introduced by a representative.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's going to go nowhere. Nothing's going to happen because I've never seen a bill get 5 committees. And some of my colleagues went digging around and they found one that had gotten 6. Right. We saw that on Twitter this week. But yeah, I mean, we don't even know how these committees are going to be run completely differently. I mean, I've been up there 6 years now doing all the sessions, and I have no idea what to expect from this new structure. Apparently, the committees are meeting on time, which is completely unfamiliar to me.
It's a revelation.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but a bill that's introduced in the House, it still has to pass the House and go to the Senate,
does it not? Yeah, so if we talk about medical marijuana, it would have to be heard in each of those 5 committees and then go over to the Senate, get assigned to committees over there, go through their committees. You know, it would get a House floor vote, then go to the Senate, then get assigned to those committees, then come down for a Senate vote. The problem is it'll almost every bill gets changed a little bit along the way. And so if the Senate amends it in committee, changes it, and then passes that, it has to go back to the House so that they can say, okay, we like your changes, or more commonly, no way.
But the bottom line is even a bill that gets introduced in this now Republican-controlled House will eventually have to pass through the Senate, where the Democrats still outnumber the Republicans 25 to 17.
Yeah, I mean, the exception would be if they used some parliamentary maneuvers to avoid the committee process. And, you know, there are a lot of things that when they go through the committee process die mysterious deaths that would go on to live and become law if they made it to the floor.
All right. Now, Margaret Wright, tell us a bit about some of the changes Republicans are ushering in the House, please. And are these
sure.
And I'm curious whether these changes are setting the stage for bipartisanship.
Well, there was an interesting discussion in the House the other day when the when Nate Gentry, who's the Republican whip, I believe, of the House now, was debating with his Democratic colleagues who were arguing pretty passionately that there were political motivations behind the changes. Gentry said that it was purely a matter of efficiency. Republicans, again, are trying to see the process move on time. They want to see bills move efficiently through the process. And there were some changes with regards to there was the Labor Committee, which was shifted.
Voting and elections.
Voting and elections was eliminated, which there was some pretty passionate debate about that. There were Democrats who were bringing up the fact that voter access is something that they feel needs safeguarding no matter at any cost, really. And the Republicans were arguing, again, that this was just a matter of efficiency. There were also changes to the Wildlife Committee. That was shifted under Energy and Natural Resources, I believe. People were concerned that wildlife issues aren't going to see the same kinds of attention with that new structure. And I remember, I think it was Representative Miguel Garcia was asking whether the governor had any input into this, and Gentry said flatly that she did not. So there was some kind of political banter going on about it. But again, there's a lot of uncertainty about how that's going to actually play out throughout the session.
Well, just as a point of clarification, Nate Gentry is the majority floor leader in the House.
So
he's going to direct
that.
The flow of legislation.
You.
No, that it's hard to keep
this,
track.
This is well, all and it's too. Actually my first session, so I'm still.
Well, he was the whip, too. So
okay. He was. Yeah. Now, Patrick Malone, we have a new Speaker of the House, Don Tripp. And I wonder if you've had a chance to meet with him. Doing some research ahead of time, I'm seeing descriptors of him, mild-mannered, unassuming, low political profile. Former Speaker Ken Martinez, here's a quote from him, he'll be pushed to be more partisan, which when I think his druthers will be to be more fair. So that'll be an interesting struggle, an unquote. So tell us a little bit about whether you've had any interactions with the new Speaker of the House, Don Tripp.
Mostly just watching him. My colleague Mylon Simonich has had more dealings with him, but those that I've had, you know, he's a very collegial sort of guy, and I think the Democrats view him as an honorable person, and that's a good first step because sometimes partisan lines blur that. But I think that they find him to be a decent enough guy. The question is going to be when the rubber meets the road on policies and shooting things down and potentially even carrying through the governor's agenda, how much are we going to see Don Tripp really jump on board for the partisan stuff? There was a fairly controversial expungement bill several years ago before I got here. And, Tripp was the only Republican to vote for it twice. So he's an independent-minded guy. But, there are a whole bunch of new pressures that come to bear when you're holding the gavel. And I wouldn't doubt that when it really comes down to those contentious, controversial moments, he's going to hold the party line because the Republicans really... they've been waiting 60 years for this. You think they're going to give it up now?
Who else, either of you, Margaret or Gwyneth, want to add anything about what you've seen from Don Tripp so far?
You know, I barely know the guy. I'm not sure I've ever interviewed him
And he's
him
been
before.
In the House 16 years.
Yeah. I mean, so I every once in a while I run into a lawmaker, especially in the House, where I think, God, I've never talked to this person. And so I've got to amend, that situation. But I think he's a really interesting choice. And I think that, in the Senate, we often see folks who are committed to making things move smoothly and not making any waves. This tends to be a legislature that does not reward real flashy moves in its leadership because they don't like it. So this is not terribly surprising.
I'm talking with journalist Patrick Malone of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Margaret Wright of the New Mexico Political Report, and Gwyneth Doland of New Mexico PBS, KUNM, and New Mexico In Depth. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook. Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or on Twitter at KUNM News. And, you know, just to let our listeners know, I've worked with the legislature in one way or another for about 15 years now. And last year I was actually up there. I was the House Majority Analyst for the State Senate. And this year I'm working for home. From home. I'm doing analysis for the courts. So my familiarity level is pretty high. And, you know, I've known for years there's been a tension even within each party in recent years between those who would encourage a conservative approach to state spending and those who suggest that we need to spend more freely to tap into resources in order to support what some would call forward-looking economic support and spending. But it's during the even-yeared sessions that we find the legislature primarily focused on the state budget. The odd years, like this year's, present a much more wide-open legislative landscape. But with falling energy prices, falling state revenues, what is being said about the budget up at the Capitol? And will that sort of overtake things at some point? Margaret, let's go to you.
Sure. Well, yesterday, just as an example of how that can play out on the micro level and the committee level, I was at a presentation that the Department of Health was giving to a Senate committee. And they were talking about the fact that they're working with they're looking at allocations for nurses at state-run facilities. And at other levels, like, for instance, CYFD is looking at whether they should accept federal funding to help bolster funding in that department, which is historically also underfunded. And that's all being played out under these new constrained situations with the general fund and falling oil and gas revenue. So you can see it playing out on kind of the micro level on a day-to-day basis. And there's definitely more pressure there now that oil and gas prices have taken such a downturn.
And Patrick Malone, what are you hearing about people talking about the budget and what the numbers that we eventually come up with are, how that's going to impact this session?
Well, I think the size of the budget isn't really in question that much. There's a consensus budget group that finds, you know, how much are we going to have to spend, and they're roughly in agreement that we're looking at about $6.3 billion, subject to change next month when we get an updated revenue forecast as oil and gas prices continue to fall. But where the real fight's going to be in the budget is over policies and priorities, and the one that really jumps out again, as it did last year, is the governor's education reform initiative. The Department of Public Education is going to be looking to institute merit pay for veteran teachers, give a pay bump to new teachers, whereas the sort of legislative budget proposal says, let's give an across-the-board pay raise to teachers, and that's going to be a philosophical fight. I think the budget is going to be where we see some of the real philosophical divides come out, and we've already seen them with some of the governor's new cabinet members, which I think is going to be a very fascinating dynamic. She's gone out and picked folks who maybe are a little less abrasive, a little easier to get along with in some departments. But in terms of their policies, they're really identical clones of their predecessors. And some of those are, for instance, at CYFD, the Children, Youth, and Families Department. Their cabinet secretary designate, Monique Jacobson, who jumped over from tourism, she's actually telling lawmakers of purse string budget committees, no thanks, I know you're proposing to give me 25 more positions, but I'm on board with the governor and let's save money here. And that's clearly an area where on the policy side, they've said, let's not save money, let's not spare expense. So it's going to be the philosophical fight in the budget. The pie is the same size, but where do the slices go?
Oh, Gwyneth, you want to add something?
Yeah, you know, I was up there yesterday doing a package for New Mexico in Focus that's going to air this Friday, talking about proposals that folks have for creating jobs and economic development. And, you know, a lot of these involve spending a little bit of money. The governor and the Senate Majority Leader agree on an idea to spend $50 million on a closing fund that would draw new businesses to New Mexico.
And did you say the governor and the Senate Majority Leader agree?
Yeah, have a drink. It's hard to believe. But they do. Not everybody likes that idea, and some folks are questioning it. it. I talked to a representative yesterday who said he's concerned that there should be some accountability and transparency measures in the closing fund because, for example, Texas's enterprise fund was audited and found to be just a slush fund full of abuse. Mm. So there's some skepticism there. But I also talked to the House Minority Leader, Brian Egolf, yesterday about a proposal he has to give to use some state investment money to give loans to small business projects that would originate with community banks. So to match loans for them. I talked to some other folks who had smaller tax deductions and incentive projects, but all of these have little price tags. And when you have less money than you think you're going to have, it becomes, there's this tension. We want more jobs. We want to bring economic development. But is this money that we're going to have to spend to do it going to be worth it?
Does the buck stop still in the Senate Finance Committee with Senator John Arthur Smith?
Well, if those bills go there, yeah.
Okay. We're discussing the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined by Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth. I'm with the New Mexico Political Report's Margaret Wright and the Santa Fe New Mexican's Patrick Malone. Join the conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, what do you expect from this year's legislative session? We'll be back with you shortly after this short break.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, more compelling and timeless moments drawn from just one of our many seasons of programs in our series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution.
Lumping people together is racism, Otto said. It did lead to the Holocaust and still destroys countless lives today.
Listen for more on Seeking Peace on Earth, a Peace Talks Radio special, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Next time on The Fabric of Our Identity, a special series from On Being, Nathan Schneider.
Because of the way we told that story, it set up a lot of young people for a kind of disappointment. And then it set up a lot of other people to say, where's your Martin Luther King coming from the sky to tell you what to do?
I'm Krista Tippett. Please join us.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're discussing the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined by journalists Patrick Malone, Margaret Wright, and Gwyneth Doland, and you can join in our conversation at, here are the numbers, 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. We'd like to hear from you. So we've had a number of issues sort of jump out that we've touched upon, and I'm just going to go around to each of you and see what you think we're actually going to see movement on this year, Margaret, here in this session.
Sure. Well, I've been talking to a lot of folks who are advocates on one side or the other of the abortion debate, which I know folks who oppose abortion and want to see more statewide restrictions are really optimistic that the new House political makeup will mean that new statewide restrictions could pass this session.
Now, when we're talking about restrictions, we're talking about somewhat like parental notification and things like that?
That's one of the things. The New Mexico Conference of Catholic Bishops is really pushing for a later term abortion ban. They said specifically they want to see a ban for pregnancies beyond 20 weeks, which is similar to a referendum that was proposed in Albuquerque in 2013 that was
It's
was
later
rejected.
Than that, isn't it?
Well, the petition that they were distributing at the rally was said specifically 20 weeks. Huh. So, but maybe you're hearing something different.
I don't know.
Well, what are you hearing on the abortion issue?
Well, I've been watching this, you know, in sessions past, and it's always been an interesting thing about our situation here in New Mexico that we have a relatively conservative legislature, even though it's been dominated by Democrats. And when you look at the numbers on the floor in the House and the Senate, the numbers are often more pro-life than they are pro-choice. And so you wonder, why is legislation not moving? And the answer is it gets killed in committee, right? So pro-choice lawmakers, you know, the situation has always been structured so that when they get to committee, they just don't come out of there and make it to the floor. Because if you look at the numbers on the Senate floor right now, there's something like 30 members on the Senate floor who would vote for measures restricting abortion. The problem is that this is going to be a political problem for the governor, who is very pro-life and feels very strongly about that. But, you know, it's a political hot potato for her. And if she wants to get elected to something else, if she's looking at national office, she's going to want to not look like she's alienating middle-of-the-road voters.
But when are her supporters here going to say, hey, this is our state, you need to deal with this, not wait and look down the road at your own political future? Is she getting that pressure?
They're definitely saying that, yes. She's getting that pressure, and abortion opponents are also planning to put that same pressure on lawmakers who have campaigned under the sort of the banner of the pro-life movement. And I was just looking over my notes that the petition from the rally that happened the opening week of the legislature does say specifically they're going to be pushing for a 20-week ban. One of the state bishops said that he wants to see restrictions definitely on anything past 28 weeks of pregnancy. But it really, nothing's been proposed yet. So again, there's a lot of uncertainty on that front as well.
Please join our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. We'd like to hear from you, Gwyneth. I apologize for interrupting.
No, I was just going to say, even though all these changes are happening in the House and the Republicans may have, in theory, renewed ardor for these proposals, they are going to get pushback from folks who don't want to rock the boat and folks who don't want to damage Martinez's chances at higher office. And no matter what happens over there, the Senate is still structured in a way that they are not going to get to the floor.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Jeff from Albuquerque. Good morning, Jeff, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for letting me make a few comments. I wanted to comment about Speaker Tripp and also an important piece of legislation. My name is Jeff Dye. I represent the New Mexico Hospital Association, and for many years I lived and worked in Socorro and really appreciated Don Tripp and his level-headedness and sincerity and honesty, and I think he'll be a great speaker, and we'll look forward to working with him. We have been working closely for almost a year with the Department of Health to tackle something very important to the public around transparency, which is we're trying to move that beyond a buzzword and make a real practical solution. And I would just alert your listeners to Senate Bill 323 that was sponsored and introduced this week by Senator Mark Moores from Albuquerque.
Now, you're talking about hospital transparency, because many have been talking this session about the transparency of the actions of the legislators, but you're talking specifically about hospital transparency, Jeff?
Yes, absolutely. And this bill, I think, is a fairly elegant solution to a complicated issue. It utilizes an existing database that has been in place for 20 years and managed by the Department of Health. Hospitals are already required to submit data to the database. And what the bill does is simply allow that to be released at the hospital-specific level to allow comparative information to be constructed, compared, and compiled and released by the Department of Health.
Well, before we go to our panel on this, let me ask you, are you getting bipartisan support for this measure?
Well, we've talked to a lot of folks, and it seems to be something that is supported. We'll see how it shakes out. Certainly, Department of Health and the administration, we've collaborated with developing it, and we think it's a good solution.
Well, Jeff, and tell us the bill number one more time before we bid you adieu today.
Senate Bill 323.
Senate Bill 323. Well, thanks so much for calling, Jeff, and people can go to that.
I've got a question about that.
Yes, Patrick, go right ahead.
I'm really glad you probably saved me a dime if it still costs that to make a phone call today. But where does this fit in with the proposal that's coming from Think New Mexico that I understand was going to be introduced in the House that would have both pricing transparency and quality measures for healthcare outcomes? Does the hospital association still, does it have a position one way or the other on the Think New Mexico proposal, and how would this differ from that one?
Well, we really haven't seen the ultimate proposal come forth from Think New Mexico. They started with a report earlier this year, and then the legislation's gone through several revisions that they are considering. So we'll wait to see what their final outcome is. Certainly, the proposal to amend the existing database and use it around charges and quality and Department of Health being able to release hospital-specific data, we think is a very simple concept, and we think also cheap to the state and less burdensome to hospitals, should be useful for the public as well.
Patrick, any follow-up, or shall we let Jeff go here?
Let's let him go.
All right, Jeff, thanks so much for calling today.
Thank you.
And Patrick, let's stick with you, because I got to talk to Margaret a little bit about something that that she's been keeping her eye on, the abortion issue. And how about for you? What are you keeping your eye on that you think might actually gain some traction this year?
Well, actually, one of those is this concept of pricing transparency. They're still making the sausage, if you will, on some of the legislation that could come out on this, but there does seem to be a measure of bipartisan support for giving healthcare consumers an informed glimpse at what they could reasonably expect to pay, and to have a one-stop shop for, you know, quality measures. I mean, I think there could be a fight internally among some of the hospitals about what measures they want to make public out there, because not everybody's going to go to the federal healthcare database and mine that out themselves. But I think there is some support for consumer healthcare transparency as a general concept. And I do also think that there's a lot of momentum for a piece of legislation that's being run by Senator Mary Kay Tappan that would give due process to Medicaid providers. I mean, that sounds sort of wonky, but it really does have a practical application about a very highly charged issue here in New Mexico, and that's the turmoil and disarray of our behavioral health Medicaid system, a lot of very vulnerable people. And that's one that really, you know, I don't think the governor, she certainly didn't bring it up in her State of the State address, and it's one that I don't know that she wants to deal with. But when you talk to Republicans and Democrats alike from throughout the state, they say, wait a second, there needs to be some accountability for what happened to the behavioral health care system here. And I think that it's also a subject that's going to maybe even pick up some traction later today when Attorney General Hector Balderas makes whatever announcement he's going to make about the topic and the audit led to it.
Well, you know, and just sticking with that subject for a minute, Senator Papin's bill was introduced last year as well. I don't have the legislative site up to know exactly what the history was, but this is the second year that she's introduced this legislation looking for due process for Medicaid providers. What do we think are chances? What are you hearing? Anybody, anything? No.
I'm not following that at all, really.
Okay. Well, tell us what you are following. Now it's your turn. What are you following that you think will actually gain some traction this year?
I'm looking mostly this session at issues of accountability, transparency, public interaction, and money in politics. So I've done some stories in the past couple weeks about a plan to make lobbyists disclose a little bit more information about how they're spending their money, including having to reveal what issues or pieces of legislation they talked about when they took a lawmaker out for coffee or a steak or skiing or whatever. And I've also been looking at campaign finance reform. Senator Peter Wirth has a big bill that he has introduced a couple times before that would tighten up loopholes created by the Citizens United decision. And he says if you can't limit the amount of money that's coming into the system, as the Supreme Court said we couldn't, at least we can find out where it's coming from. So it would do several things, but the overall effect would be to come as close as he thinks we can to finding out more about the sources of dark money in the system.
While Citizens United is still the law of the land.
Right.
I take it. I was looking at that bill myself yesterday, and the addition of state legislators within being able to get public financing was an interesting wrinkle in his bill that I found.
That's another bill.
That's a different
one. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have seen in the past Well, since we've started doing public financing, we've seen some issues with how they're spending the money, you know, and one of the problems is if you don't have an opponent, are you still going to take this public money to campaign? You don't need it. So that's been a problem. And then we've seen folks spending it on, say, paying themselves and their friends and family members to campaign, which is, many people say, inappropriate.
I'm talking with journalist Patrick Malone of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Margaret Wright of New Mexico Political Report, and Gwyneth Doland of New Mexico PBS, KUNM, and New Mexico In Depth. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or on Twitter at KUNM News. Let's go to another caller now. Sarah is joining us on the line from Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah.
Yes, thanks for this very interesting show. You know, I just want to mention about the Republicans. You know, they always claim that they're more strict, and they, you know, are claiming that they will do a better job. So I wonder if they can reduce a pedestrian fatality rate. You know, New Mexico is the top third in the nation for pedestrian fatality, and I think I was told that we killed about 14 people already, and this is like the 28th of this year, already 14 people have been killed. And so, you know, I wonder if they love to put people in jail and give sentencing, so I wonder if they are going to, you know, put people in jail if they get caught for negligent and careless driving that's resulting in death.
Sarah, I'm curious because this is an issue I know you've called about before, and I'm wondering if you have been up to the Capitol to talk to legislators. And and once we hear from Sarah, let's talk a little bit about citizen participation up there. So, Sarah, have you been up to the Capitol, or do you plan on going up to the Capitol to talk to people about this issue?
Well, you know something? I'm not really organized because I don't have a vehicle. I'm a pedestrian. I ride the bus and I walk, you know, and I have to cross at the intersection. So I don't have a cart to go up there, and I don't have this organization where, you know, like the bicyclists that have been lobbying and the people that are interested in bringing a red light camera.
All right.
I'm not in
All right, I do want to encourage you to contact your legislators, and maybe Gwyneth is going to say the same thing. Go ahead, Gwyneth.
Well, you know what I was going to say is that this is something that we've been looking at this session, too, with New Mexico In Depth. And New Mexico In Depth put out a great citizen's guide to the legislature that sort of, you know, hints at some of these barriers that there are to public participation in the legislature. A, it's in January in Santa Fe, and it's snowing like heck.
Now, there's a reason. There's a historical reason for that, though, because agriculture was dormant at that time.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
That's the historical reason.
Back in ye olden times, that was more convenient.
Yes.
But now, I mean, I woke up this morning, looked at the weather report. I'm supposed to have my intern drive with me tomorrow to Santa Fe. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to make her drive in this snow tomorrow. I'm going to tell her to stay home and I'm going to take the train. And I mean, that's just a little thing. But you think of how many people have problems taking off of work in the middle of the day to drive hours and hours. Santa Fe could be 5 hours from somewhere in southern New Mexico to drive all the way up there and then get there and find out there's absolutely nothing going on the day they arrive.
Right.
The thing that they came to see has been moved. It's not happening. It's not heard in committee. It can be very difficult for the average person to figure out what connection there is at all between things they care about and how to make them happen.
And so I urge people to call if that's all they can do, because those calls are taken by secretaries and they're recorded and positions are noted.
Lawmakers care about that and they do look at it. And you know, I think it's really helpful when they can just get a tally of numbers, you know, SB 323, the hospital transparency bill that we were talking about a minute ago. You can call and say, yes, I like it. No, I don't like it. And they have a little list. But you can also call and say, I really want you to do something about XYZ. And that also comes out on the list.
We're discussing the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined by Gwyneth Doland, Margaret Wright, Patrick Malone, journalists all. And you can join our conversation at 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. I've got some email comments and questions for the panel here that I'll read when we come back from this short break.
If one of your New Year's resolutions is to get rid of that old car or truck that doesn't run anymore, that's one you can keep with one simple phone call. Annual proceeds from vehicle donations equal what we take in during one on-air pledge drive, so it's a very important source of income for KUNM. When you donate your unwanted vehicle, you're helping KUNM while helping yourself to check one off your list. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
It's time to elect four people to the KUNM Radio Board, and you're invited to nominate yourself. We welcome people from all walks of life. People from various backgrounds are encouraged to participate, and a broad array of points of view and philosophies are welcome. Nominations must be in by 5 p.m. February 19th, mailed or delivered to University Secretary, Scholes Hall, UNM 87131. For complete information on the KUNM Radio Board elections, call 277-4664 or visit kunm.org/about.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking about the 2015 legislative session. To participate in our program, email us at callinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. We've got a couple of people who've done just that. And Patrick, let me read this one to you. Richard says, I would like legislation that adds an indexed fuel tax that would disappear as prices increase to make up for the budget shortfall. Also, rules requiring gun owners to keep weapons away from kids. What's your comment back to Richard about either one of those ideas of his, please?
Well, you're never going to get a tax passed this governor, so kiss that one goodbye, at least for the next 4 years. But there is certainly support for it in the legislature, and I think a lot of people feel like New Mexico's gas tax has stayed where it is way too long. It's been about 20 years since it's gone up. And at a time when fuel prices are low, it's an attractive option to fund road programs and things like that. And gun control is just too much a red meat issue when Republicans control one chamber. I just don't see how those would have a realistic chance of passing.
Anybody?
Yeah, this legislature is very gun-friendly for the most part, so I don't see that going anywhere.
All right, here's another email comment, and Margaret, let's have you address this one from Aaliyah. New Mexico is the second poorest state, rated poorly for children, and a violent place. Legislation needs to address this, or the educated and professionally mobile will run.
Hmm. Well, I'd be curious to hear what people think about specific measures that they might suggest for addressing especially childhood poverty. I know the governor is outlining a proposal to boost resources for early childhood education and CYFD family supports. So I'd be curious to hear if people have any thoughts on those two issues, because especially early childhood advocates say that that's kind of the first line of defense, is starting with early childhood education and young families to help combat outcomes for children.
Well, and we've seen a push to get money from the permanent fund to address just that issue, because so many people consider it to be like a baseline foundational issue. Maybe we can't fix our ills right now, but let's look to the future. Gwyneth?
Yeah, this is a fundamental problem between liberals and conservatives. Conservatives look at the permanent fund and say, no, 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 no. We have to leave this alone. This is really important. This money funds our education system, and we are not going to mess with it. We're not going to do any weird stuff with it. And liberals say, we have one of the biggest permanent funds in the world. We have a ton of money in that thing. And why are we spending so much of it on K through 12 when we could improve our, you know, K through 12 outcomes if we moved a little bit of it to the pre-K portion? There's a lot of different ways to get at that, but taking money from the permanent fund is always a tricky thing.
Well, and some people call it the rainy day fund, and some people say, hello, look, it's raining, and others say it's not raining hard enough yet.
Yeah.
It might rain harder.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead to Ronald from Albuquerque, and I believe, Patrick, Ronald might have a question that you might be able to weigh in. Ronald, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having the show. It's really quite interesting. I'm particularly interested in this Senate Bill 323. We're talking about outcomes transparency. But a problem I've heard of with a lot of this outcomes transparency is that the input is ignored. if you were to publish the outcomes of a cardiologist in the rich part of Albuquerque who only accepts patients who do not smoke, do not have high blood pressure, and who take their medicines reliably, and compare his outcomes with a cardiologist at UNM taking all comers, including the diabetics, the hypertensives, and the homeless, whose outcome is going to be better regardless of the quality of care provided by the cardiologist?
All right, Ronald, let's get some comment on that. Thanks so much for your call today. Patrick, thoughts on that?
The bill, as I read it, and, you know, there's not a fiscal impact report, which is like our Cliff Notes that tells us, oh, that's what it really means that we often rely on. But in reading just the raw text of the bill, it does seem to take into account health behavior, disability, things like that.
We are sorry, but because of technical difficulties, the final 10 minutes of today's KUNM call-in show are unavailable.